Blog Talk Radio.
Just a step, cried the sad man. Take a look down at the madman. Theater king's on. Silver wings fly beyond reason. From the flight of the seagull come the spread claws of the eagle. Only fear breaks the silence as we all kneel, pray for guidance. We'll be right back.
Freaky Darlings, and welcome to Late Night Poets After Midnight Show, where you get to take a walk on the wild side. If you're into the likes of Ginsberg, Bukowski, Ferlinghetti, Getty, Kerouac, and Morrison, then you are on the right night. But please check out our other After Midnight shows. Sit in with Pam on Friday for Break On Through, and join Aphasia and Babble on Saturday as they teach you the fine art of becoming part sinner, part saint. And every other Sunday, join Arcana and Lulu as they go delving deep into the darkness. These shows are designed to shoot in color outside the lines with rich raw emotions, tinged with colloquial language, thereby pushing the envelope to expression and opening up new avenues of thought through pen and voice. So, pull up a chair, relax, and open your minds. I'm Rex, and my co-host Pam Ray and I can't wait to get into and read your words. Evening, Pam.
Good evening, Rex.
What's doing?
Oh, not much. Same old, same old. So, did you want to tell us about tonight's topic?
Just some quotes out of Vonnegut's Slaughterhouse Five.
Very cool. Great choice. It had a good response for right in the contest, quality and quantity. Always a good thing. All right, and I see Naomi, Darkened Auras, and Northern Phoenix are all hanging out in the room in Late Night Poets, so it's good to see them. Hello to all of them.
Hello, guys. Yeah. How you doing?
All right. I've gone ahead and put up Bargain Lost by Darkened Auras. Go ahead, please, Rex, and give that a read.
Bargain Lost by Darkened Auras. I'm numb inside. I feel nothing. I know nothing. I am nothing without her. It's amazing. I get credit for being alive even while I feel dead. But what does that entail? Being alive means I still have to worry. About gas in my car to get to work, I must drudge through to get the money to stave off the wolves at the door. I'm drowning, you know. Why not also drown my sorrows? Looks like tonight my disease will kick in. I'm not sure what it's called. Wasted winery, regretful ruination, delusional dumbassery, whatever you want to call it. It's where I get shit-faced and call my ex-wife, begging her to come back, swearing I've changed, and crying that she's my only love. Sad thing is, that part's true. So why did I think cheating was a good thing to do? My eyes were closed to the beauty of us, and darkness deceived me, casting a glowing light on ladies of the night, the roses, just mustard gas beneath a corner streetlight. I thought they were angels as I bargained with the devil and lost the love of my life, my beautiful wife. Now I'm lost within his grip. I lost his game and he won my soul. And I finally see now that he will never let go. End poem. And DA took a couple of prompts. Like roses and mustard gas, like the darkness of closed eyes on a summer day, I had this disease late at night sometimes involving alcohol and the telephone, and how nice to feel nothing and still get full credit for being alive. Nice to be there, Christina. Thank you. All right, Pam.
Yeah, I really liked this one. I thought she did a great job with the first-person narrative from the point of view of a man who is dealing with addiction, and I particularly pick up on addiction to gambling, but also drinking, and chooses his vices over the love of a good woman. And I really like this all the way through, but especially being alive means I still have to worry about gas in my car to get to work. I must drudge through to get the money to stave off the wolves at the door. I thought the wolves at the door was a great line for the idea of those the bill collectors and, you know, those people that you borrow money from, you know, especially like loan sharks. It has a whole loan sharks type feel to it. I thought they were angels as I bargained with the devil and lost the love of my life, my beautiful wife. Now I'm lost within his grip. I lost his game and he won my soul. You know, I just think this is a great story, right, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. I'm going to go with let's see, having his cake and eating it too. Maybe he should have kept his diction in his pants, considering he had plenty around with the ladies of the evening. Now that that note that Christina got into, wasted winery, I like that, regretful ruination, and delusional dumbassery. Now that's the topper right there, and a winner. I like that, delusional dumbassery. Oh, yeah. That's when you've got everything you need, and all of a sudden you figure out it's not enough. I want more. So you play stupid, and you get the back end of the deal. Out on your ass, because with that divorce, everything got taken, and you still got to pay. So you know what? Keep your diction in your pants. And honor what you got to begin with. That bargain lost, well, you might have thought it was a bargain at the time. Well, now you get to pay the long game. I like that. Nicely done, Christina. Thank you very much. All right, where are we going to go now?
Up next, we have Slaughtered Love, which is a collaboration between Jenny the Deep, Jason James, Repeated Nap, and Brandon. And it goes like this. Exes are exes for a reason. Two souls ripped apart now are healing. Mutual it wasn't as we come to a brutal end. Not meant to be lovers, not even friends. Although apart with a fresh start, now slow, steady, and smart, we learned a valuable lesson. Everything in life, even love, comes to an end. It's not our hearts that have been poisoned, but the water we swim in. That's why I am and will always be broken. Pain, each gently spoken, real, just what make believe believes in. Poison, just Cupid and his drugs, gotta remember, gotta love. Number one, whomever they that may be, decide even angels are picky and choosy. That noise, just a beat once held high, remembering once I was your life. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. Funny, you got four people writing this, and it looks like only one did it. That's that's kind of difficult to do. I'll be the point as to who did what, because it meshes well. It meshes really well. Let's see what's in it. It's not our hearts that have been poisoned, but the water we swim in. Oof. That's why I am and will always be broken. Damn. There's a hard note to reality, owning part of it maybe, and pain, each greatly spoken, real, just what makes believes in. Poison, just Cupid and his drugs, gotta remember, gotta love. Oof, a double dip there. Cupid and his drugs, poison. There's a note to being on the hard end of that first stanza. Not even meant to be lovers or even friends. Brutal end. That's kind of hits the idea of dipping the legs in before the toes have even warmed up to each other. It's that note of going whole hog before you find out what you're really getting into, and then it just kind of blows up in your face. And then I suppose you get a valuable lesson out of it. Everything life, even love, comes to an end. Yes. That's a hard note there. Slaughtered Love. Well done, you guys. Thank you very much. All right, Pam, what is it? Wow, 2, 5, 11, 12. Another one with lots of pumps. All right, Pam, what do you think?
Yeah. Well, you know, I like that they decided to all collaborate together. Very cool. You know, you can tell that there's a, I mean, definitely, you know, it works well. But you can see, like, I think little differences within the styles of each stanza. But still, they stayed fairly consistent with the rhyme pattern, and obviously very consistent with theme. And I like how each stanza could work on its own and yet offers up a full picture of what it's like, the harsh reality of lessons learned from lost love and broken hearts. I thought they all did a wonderful job, and this was very well done.
Nicely said. All right. What we got going next?
Up next, we have In the Graves, the Coffins by Ken Smith. And go ahead, please, Rex, and give that a read.
In the Graves, the Coffins by Ken Smith. Become frames of past photos, a white picket fence surrounding the property of family, a floppy disk of gray cardboard that no longer fits in updated tech devices, filed and forgotten. The language in the picture, indecipherable, passed through consciousness, lingers dimly in the imagination. In decay in the underworld, dissolving, it becomes a loose net in a square parcel of the sea. The glass gone foggy, sprinkled with sand like late generations of fishermen, we blindly tug at the line, hoping to haul a far distant relative up from their endless sleep, catching reflection of the moon or the ghost of a drowned face. As water fills your mouth. And poem. And Ken took number two, which was like the darkness of closed eyes on a summer's day. All right. What do you think, Pam?
I liked this one. I thought it had amazing imagery and metaphors. As always, Ken offers up a thoughtful write. And I like how it speaks to me on two different ideas. First of all, the idea that we become consumed with the past and end up drowning within it. And the other idea being that, you know, it's the thought that, to me anyways, that when we bury a loved one, we're not just burying their physical body. We're burying all the memories and that they were a part of, and all that they meant to us, all that we depended on them for, becomes nothing. Instead of a living person, it gets transferred to the pictures that we look upon. I really like a floppy disk of gray cardboard that no longer fits and updated tech devices filed and forgotten, the language in the pictures indecipherable, passed through consciousness, lingers dimly in the imagination. You know, when all we have left is pictures, and pictures are just such a small portion of all that we experienced with this person, there's so much that we eventually end up losing. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. That first stanza hit into a time gone by, what used to be. The second one walks into the world we live in now, the floppy disk, gray cardboard no longer fits, and updated tech devices filed and forgotten. The idea of technology is moving so fast that you don't even get prints these days. You get little memory cards. Everything gets filed on. The language in the picture in the cycle passed through consciousness, lingers dimly in the imagination. Forgotten pictures, because you don't have the negatives any longer, but you've got a picture that's kind of frayed at the edges, so to speak, and glass gone foggy, sprinkled with sand, the late generations of fishermen. We blindly tug at the line, trying to figure out the who, the what, the where, and the people in the pics, because the notes who are passing on has become a little bit lost generationally. And then hoping to haul a far distant relative from up in the endless fleet, catching a reflection of the moon or the ghost of a drowned face. The idea of remembrance, but not really having that that token, that momentum more that sticks like we used to, having a picture on a desk. That doesn't exist anymore. People are putting up pictures on as wallpaper or on their telephones. As water fills your mouth, that kind of hits the idea of we're drowning in the technology without the idea of understanding where we're coming from. So thank you very much, Ken. All right, Pam, we're back to you.
All right. Up next, we have Photosynthesis by Naomi Sarah. They say plants breathe out oxygen through their leaves, so I lug in the giant palm tree from off the deck and plop it down outside your bedroom door before climbing into an empty bed too cold, too big for another lonely night of listening to your loud, ragged breath from across the narrow hall. They come in deep, spasmic shudders, whistling through your cancer-burnt lungs as if summoning death. And I get up and water the huge palm tree again and fling open the curtains, hoping it will drink in a flicker of light from the moon. Open the freezer and pop ice cubes into a glass. Pour in vodka and suck it down in one quick gulp. Then pour in some more and turn to pick up the phone to dial my daughter, pretending I'm sipping in enough water and sunshine to still be able to breathe. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. And Naomi took 9 and 11. I have this disease late at night sometimes involving alcohol and telephone. And how nice to feel nothing and still get full credit for being alive. Okay. I like that idea in that first stanza, the first couple of lines. But lugging in that giant palm in from the deck and plop it down outside your bedroom door. But the back end of that first stanza is ragged. Before climbing into an empty bed, too cold, too big for another long, lonely night of listening to your loud, ragged breaths from across the hall, and then that opening up cancer-burnt lungs, I guess something death in that second stanza. Ooh. And then that thought to the getting up to water the huge palm tree again, and then watering herself and making the phone call that late night of that keeps you awake. You just can't sleep. But even with the couple of shots and the phone call, you need to talk to somebody because it's rough. It's hard. You know what's going on, yet the admittance to it kind of offers up that other extra note of loneliness from the first stanza, knowing that somewhere down the line that you won't have to worry about that breath because it'll be coming in its last gasp someday, or maybe someday soon even. And that reality kind of walks hard in the late evenings when you hear the breathing and you understand what's going on. So it's rough.
Yeah, I thought this was a powerful and emotive write. It's raw, and it's a really raw exposure of human emotions as one tries to hold it together in a difficult time. And I like how she brings in the palm tree as a metaphor for not only you know, trying to help a loved one who's severely sick and trying to breathe, but also the whole idea of trying to find a way to catch your own breath as you're dealing with everything that's going on. You know, all the way she threw the whole poem, she leads to that beginning and how one tries to deal with the sorrows and the pain and, you know, trying to find that breath that you can't catch, trying to, you know, numb the pain with alcohol, you know, looking upwards, you know, towards the moon, towards the sunshine, you know, towards whatever, you know, higher power is out there, trying to find some sense of hope and understanding for it all. And then, of course, you know, sometimes I think, you know, we all need that person that we can call late at night when we need someone to talk to. And I just think this is a, like I said, it's a powerful and emotive rite. It's all the way through and very deeply expressed. So great writing, Naomi.
All righty. So what are we getting into? All right.
Up next we have Unstuck in Time by S. Sharp. And go ahead, Rex.
Unstuck in Time by S. Sharp. I am myself with the ammunition of life, of time, where cardboard sacks, human plow horses charge onward, nobody pulling reins of time. Plastic roses perfume my mustard gas lungs, a filthy pink flamingo with one full leg standing on the verge, death by alcohol, submerged in phlegm and vomit, carpet bombed by yesterday's battles. Spaceships hover above, testing, probing, experimenting, lights and a rhythmic hum shed nightfall, vacuuming up past, present, and future me, pasting them on a timeline. Strapped like a death row convict, memories collect and pool, swirl and drain with a gurgling sound, leaving a dirty ring along the basin where they tell me to spit. Bloody saliva, signs of life, come from a shell abandoned years before, like spent bullets, a jaded shell, knowing there is but one live round left, save for this mark on the timeline. End poem. All right, Pam.
Great read, Rex. It feels like we're doing the time warp again. But I thought this had brilliant imagery and metaphors, was an excellent write on the times that one tries to forget while hurtling towards the end of life. I also like that there's so many references to the ugliness of life and to everything that feels so fake, like where he says plastic roses perfume and a filthy pink flamingo with one full leg standing on the verge, death by alcohol, submerged in phlegm and vomit, carpet bombed by yesterday's battles. Again, we're looking at the idea of addiction. It almost seems like within those lines is the whole idea of alcohol used to forget time served in war. And I like bloody saliva, signs of life come from a shell. And I like that because, you know, on one hand you see bloody saliva and you instantly think of death, but it is a sign of life and it's a horrible and ugly sign. But, you know, a sign nonetheless. And there is but one live round left save for this mark on the timeline. I feel like those end lines speak on the idea of somebody who has reached the point of taking their own life because they can no longer stand the ugliness around them and the ugliness within them. So excellent write and very well done.
Nice, thank you, Pam. That opening stanza, I like that. Kind of hits at the idea of youth, especially with nobody pulling the reins of time, the idea of we run headlong into everything in youth and you don't think about the future and what lays within it. But that second stanza kind of hits on the idea of where it lays now. Plastic roses perfume my mustard gassed lungs. A filthy pink flamingo with one full leg standing on the verge, death by alcohol, submerged in phlegm and vomit, carpet bombed by yesterday's battles. Oof. Carpet bombed by yesterday's battles. All of that was spewed from everywhere, probably. And then I like the third one, too. Spaceships hover above, testing, probing, experimenting, lights in a rhythmic hum, shed nightfall, vacuuming up past, present, and future me, pacing them on a timeline. Again, that note to a bed and the hospital itself, the idea of a spaceship, testing, probing, experimenting. They're trying to prolong, but he knows, because he hits it in the last stanza, and strapped like a death row inmate, a convict, memories collect and pool, swirl and drain with a gurgling sound, leaving a dirty ring along the basin where they found it stood. Oof. There is a note to the heaviness of not just the gas, the mustard gas lungs, but what the alcohol has done to. And that last stanza, there is but one live round left, save for this mark on the timeline. It's an idea of understanding. Time is of the essence. There is none left. And kind of hits at the idea of do you take the pill that eases you over the edge because you know you're going there anyway and it'd be easier going down on your own terms? Possibly. Nicely done, Scott. Thank you very much. All right. Where are we going next?
Up next, we have Not a Tangent by Blue Right 76. They teach you wrong. They lead you false. Illusion of safety. Life, non-guarantee. Not again. Not again. The guns of yore, Brando brandished. Cowboy hats aflung. Fell the villains all. Gone now. Gone now. They guide you blind. They make you they take you fools. Illusion of laughter snuffed away later. Not again, not again. The bullets that grazed found the fiend's flesh, blood for red blood, not a drop gone awry. Gone now, gone now. They caught you tight, the mesh of velvets, illusion of passion, burn your compassion. Not again, not again. Not right to hurt, never true the lies. Lady dances in the rain. They swung with her. Gone now, gone now. The ghosts get away, sneer and holler loud. Goodness unwanted, nights tasty no more. Not again, not again. Give back my love, give back the smile. For all things bright, beautiful and right. Come again, come again. Not just a story, a life on its own, illusion of dreams, drowns many a clown. Listen now, listen now. Eliot's and Hardy's taught you strife, melancholic Byron's, dark yet true. Listen now, listen now. You think it's easy, you can't get away. They boomerang every right and wrong. Listen now. Listen now, and poem.
Great, great, Pam. Thank you very much. This is interesting. It hits on the idea. What I'm getting at is the thought of what once was. The because you got Brando in here, you got Eliot, you've got Byron, Hardy, and. A few more. So I'm getting the impression of, especially after that first stanza, they teach you wrong, they use you false, illusion of safety, life not guaranteed. There is heavy truth in that, yes. But the thoughts and everything else kind of hits on the idea of what you read and what you see and what you get out of books and what you see in movies isn't real yet. There is some notice in the back end, the LH, the Hardys, the thought of torture strike, melancholic Byron, start at you, listen now. You think it's easy, you can't get away, they boomerang, every right and wrong. Okay. The idea with the every right and wrong, balance. You need a balance in life going forward. Otherwise, wrong's always boomerang. Sometimes the right you do, they hit you the wrong way because it might not have been the best time to offer up that right, so to speak. Even when you're right, you can be wrong in the moment. So that idea of understanding, instead of believing in everything you see that's brandished in front of you, it doesn't work that way. You've actually got to live and pay attention to life and what you're doing as opposed to what you're offering up. Because there are some times when it's better to keep your mouth shut than to say something, even though you feel it's in your gut and you know it's right to say it, but it might end up being on the very wrong time to offer up that note. So that's what I'm getting out of this. What about you?
Yeah, I really like this one, and I like the thoughts that you had there on it. Yeah, I noticed that they said they wrote in the style of the Nevermind song of the show True Detective, which is a song by Leonard Cohen. And I thought that was cool and interesting. I don't really know the song that well, though, but I'll have to look at it later. But they were inspired by all the prompts, which was another cool thing. I like the use of repetition and how there was a lot of mention of his figures from throughout history. I really like how, to me, this spoke on the idea of the lies told in order to give the people a false sense of security. In order to, you know, help them to feel as if, you know, there's nothing wrong, and the idea of blindsiding people. When I commented earlier, they responded with, you know, thank you, and then they said, I loved writing this poem. And I think that's great too. I love seeing stuff like that because, to me, if someone is inspired and they truly enjoy what they're writing, that is the best thing ever. I really like where it says, the guns of yore, Brando brandish, cowboy hats aflung, fell the villains all, gone now. You know, I think those lines speak to me on the idea of gone are those times when it was easy to tell the difference between good and evil. And then they guide you blind, they take you fools, illusion of laughter snuffed away later. It says I was saying originally about the idea of making sure that the people don't see the truth, basically keeping everyone like satiated sheep. So excellent right and very well done.
Well, that kind of comes with the idea. The reason for movies and books are entertainment. It's not that they're actually, well, some books do offer up real, but they, you know that. It's the idea of knowing it's entertainment, knowing the difference. Sometimes people dig in a bit too deeply and they take it with them.
Yep. Great. That is true. Well said there. All right. And up next we have Give It to God or to Google by Julie Buck. And go ahead, please, Rex.
Give It to God or to Google by Julie Buck. My family, fakes, liars, Catholic, and discreet. I must be living as I did purchase one life. I still have the receipt. Bah, says I, the blackest sheep, more so than even my brother. Nothing pulled us all further apart than the death of my own mother. A fight with my virginal sister, Mother Mary's right arm, formed in the miraculous shape of Jesus' head. I blasted my sis, though I meant no harm. Give it to God, she said. Numbness, denial, you are my friends. Cause people suck when you praise them. It's a cool compliment when you criticize. It's a cold and firm judgment. Wouldn't that praise be a judgment as well? Just go to hell. In this world, feeling nothing is the only way to survive. Dad, I asked, where is the funeral home and the cemetery? He said for me to give it to Google. Google sent me to Narnia, where there I was able to bury a few billion tears and angry strips of metal that fell off my wagon. So you see what I'm saying? Nobody needs me. Nobody wants me. Nobody looks for me. But what the fuck? If the Department of Motor Vehicles deems me to be living, then I suppose it's only me that ain't feeling it. And that just some, ain't that just some wicked evil shit? And boom. All right, Pam.
I like this. It's biting. It's got a dark humor to it. It's another one that really looks at the raw reality of life. It's interesting how it seems like when there's a death in a family, especially of a key figure, it's either going to tear the family apart or it's going to bring them closer together. I really just absolutely enjoy Julie's sense of humor. A fight with my virginal sister, Mother Mary's right arm formed in the miraculous shape of Jesus' head. I blasted my sister, though I meant no harm. Give it to God, she said. And that title, the title is great. Give it to God or Google, you know. And I like where she says, Dad, I asked, where is the funeral home and the cemetery? He said for me to give it to Google. Google sent me to Narnia. Well, there I was able to bury a few billion tears and angry strips of metal that fell off my wagon. You know, sometimes we just need those moments alone to shed those tears, because a lot of times people think they're giving good advice when really all they're offering up are platitudes for your grief, which do absolutely no good. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. I do like the biting humor in this. I, the blackest sheep, more so than even my brother. Okay. That note with the virginal sister, Mother Mary's right arm, look in the miraculous shape of Jesus' head. That was funny. Numbness, denial, you are my friends, because people suck. When you praise them, it's a cool compliment. When you criticize, it's cold and firm judgment. Wouldn't that praise be a judgment as well? Well, that is a biting question. Most wouldn't look at it that way, but it is a question. And then that thought, question for Dad. He said, give it to God, Google, and Google sent me to Narnia. Narnia, what is that? The broomstick in the closet or something like that?
Something like that.
Okay. And a few billion tears and angry strips of metal that fell off my wagon. That had me thinking of the little red wagon. You remember those from way back in the day? No? Okay.
I'm
so
sorry.
You can see what I'm...
Oh, are you talking about the what is it, the Red Rider wagons?
Yep.
Yes, yes. Yep, good stuff, good times.
And then I thought, nobody needs me, nobody wants me, nobody looks for me. Yeah, but the Department of Motor Vehicles deems me to be living. I like that. Of course. They keep sending me notice, hey, it's time to pay some more. And that sort of, then I suppose it's only me that ain't feeling it. Ain't that just some evil, wicked shit? the funny thing is, the offering up notes with how the family depicted kind of hits the same idea of the quote she took. How nice to feel nothing and still get full of credit for being alive. You can say the same thing about the sister, the brother, the father. So it kind of walks in the very same tone. And maybe the language is apropos to the environment created. I like that. Nicely biting humor, Julie. Thank you. All right. Where are we going next?
Up next, we have Happy Hour by Mermaid. Do you recall Cashmere Friday evenings, how we used to go for our quick fix drinks where the local restaurant district offered happy hours between 3 and 6, advertising steak and seafood entrees on boards of smudged chalk artwork and decadent peach desserts for free, when we still imagined we could deal? Now champagne floats dead, flattened by sour lines and worn out tequila sunrises, where you left me in a 5-gallon gabled prison to sip on vodka martinis without meaning, onyx silver jets, kick back on ebony air, in skies of mauve merlot meandering, collecting first-class trophy mimosas on trays of salmon rosé caviar cliches, fall windows flipped back, folds blinded by promises of daybreaks on indigo seas, when all that remains are washed-up slick moss quays and saline musings of seagulls with tethered wings. End poem.
Great reading, and Mermaid took the quote, the champagne was dead. Now, that first stanza, the sort of Cashmere Friday evenings for our quick fix drinks where the local restaurant district offered happy hour between 3 and 6. That note's between 3 and 6 kind of hits the early bird specials, usually what you get for the older folks. And they go out and get the early bird, get dinner, and maybe a couple of drinks. And dessert's always included. Why? Because it's a slower time for restaurants and a great time for older people to get in, grab an early dinner, and enjoy themselves. I like everything else you dropped in here. That thought with that was onyx silver. Onyx silver jets kick back on ebony air in skies of mauve merlot meandering, collecting first-class trophy mimosas on trays of salmon rosé, caviar cliches. A dip in what one used to do back in the day, but also that sort of onyx silver jets kick back. There's a thought to hair, not just air, the idea of getting older within that, and the mauve merlot meandering, collecting first-class trophy mimosas on trays of salmon rosé. Is that look back at what one used to do as opposed to that opening stanza where now times are a little different. You don't do the jet setting anymore or the high living because, quite frankly, you don't have time for it. You can't afford it. And for the most part, you get those early meals because that's where life has gone. And the faux windows flip back, folds blinded by promise of daybreak on indigo seas, when all that remains are washed up slick moss quays. Kind of hits at the back end of life too. The thought of we used to enjoy all these things, but life has given us maybe a little bit of regret on the back end, because she does use that quote. Now champagne floats dead, flattened by our sour lines and worn-out tequila sunrises. The idea of maybe living a bit too richly in the day and maybe aged a bit too quickly. So I like that thought. Nicely done, Mermaid. All right, what about you?
Yeah, I like what you had to say about living a bit too richly and aging a bit too quickly. I thought that was cool. This has amazing imagery and metaphors. I like how Mermaid offers up almost always with her writing a taste of surrealism, and yet the surrealism doesn't take away from the emotional impact of her writing. Wonderful and heartfelt lines, and I like how it speaks on the magic of love and life falling flat. You know, the idea of time spent together, and feeling like you understood life, feeling like you understood love, and then it all just becomes meaningless. I really liked that third stanza as well as the one following it, and especially the line, collecting first-class trophy mimosas on trays of salmon rosé caviar cliches. And I like how the idea of caviar cliches is something you thought you wanted, when all along it was something of little to no substance. So excellent write and very well done.
All right. What are we going to dip into next?
Encroaching Darkness by Marriott Dark. And go ahead, Rex.
Encroaching Darkness by Marriott Dark. Oh, pilgrim, what implacable fade night has perished behind your darkened phoenix eyes and eaten away your phallic imagination. Your solitude is complete. Your vision unfounded, even with eyes closed. The darkness is suffused in blood and whispers. In derelict buildings, the final judgment is passed behind a thousand multifaceted window panes. Bestiality stares down in sentient paralysis. A war of words slathered in compound eye-watering darkness. O pilgrim, where is your morality now? Who stole your Pyrrhic victory from under your nose? Pressed into your sweat-stained sheets. Your prayers remain unanswered. The war goes on in your absence of immortality. We spoke of the old gods who battled and lusted more, once etched in blood and stone before monotheism claimed providence and blurred the battle lines by electrification and emasculating the life force as punishment for our sins, nailing our transgressions to a tree as a consequence. O pilgrim, hide in your ascetic's cave. The bombs have stopped falling, and your fate is sealed among the rubble and dust and desiccated flesh and bone, and eyes closed in reverent prayer. And poem. And Marianne took, like the darkness of closed eyes on a summer day. All right, what you got?
Yeah, the main idea that this spoke to me on was the idea of a journey of transformation that leads ultimately to death. The imagery and the metaphors in it is both powerful and visceral. I really like your solitude is complete, your visions unfounded, even with eyes closed, the darkness is suffused in blood and whispers. In derelict buildings, the final judgment is passed behind a thousand multifaceted window panes. Bestiality stares down in sentient paralysis, a war of words slathered in compound eye-watering darkness. The idea of someone facing their own inner battles and taking this journey, and I like the use of the word pilgrim because it's the idea of taking a spiritual or religious journey. Here it's, a journey of self-discovery. Emasculating the life force as punishment for our sins, nailing our transgressions to a tree as a consequence. Oh, pilgrim, hide in your aesthetics cave. The bombs have stopped. That is really strong lines and imagery with the aesthetics cave being, when we try to hide away from the realities of what's going on in the world. So excellent write and very well done.
Nice. And thank you very much. All right. Title Officer John Floyd. I like that note, the first line. O pilgrim, what implacable fate night has perished behind your darkened sphinx eyes and eaten away your phallic imagination? Well, there's a whole lot that rolls into that fading idea of the immortality of the soul. Your solitude is complete. Your vision or visions unfounded. Even with eyes closed, the darkness is suffused in blood and whispers. Death. In derelict buildings, the final judgment is passed behind a thousand multifaceted window panes. Bestiality stares down in sentient paralysis, a war of words slathered in compound eye-watering darkness. I like that. That's the note to church with the sort of the windows glowing down, the multicolored windows, and the priest offering up last notes to a death. And then they open that second, that next one. Where is your morality now? Who stole your pyrrhic victory from under your nose, pressed it into your sweat-stained sheets, which rolls back to the phallic disquisition up front. So this guy, he's asking, where's your morality now? Because the war goes on in your absence of immortality. Kind of obvious. You profess to have an immortal soul, yet your trundling, so to speak, your loose morals, isn't connected now because there is no immortality to you. And then the idea of we spoke of the old gods who battled and lusted more, once etched in blood and stone before monotheism claimed providence and blurred the battle lines by electrification and emasculating the life forces punishing for our sins. Again, there's a lot of truth in how we used to hold a number of gods. It didn't matter what it was. We had a god for everything. And strip that away as paganistic in its representation to sit and bathe between one. Yet, that kind of sits on the idea of, because he hits on the next one, nailing our transgressions to a tree as a consequence. Oof. Kind of that note to hypocrisy in still being called a sinner, even though the sins have supposedly been paid for up front. And hide in your ascetics cave, the bonds have stopped falling, and your fate is sealed among the rubble and dust of desiccated flesh and bone, and eyes closed in reverent prayer. Again, the back end to the priest holding his arm in, and everybody bends their head and closes their eyes in prayer. Oh, this is all about the note to what goes on in the church before the actual burial itself, and he's questioning quite a bit. I like this. Thank you, Myriad. All right. We're back to you.
All right. Up next, we have Invisible Realms by Betty Page. Dancing across the ledge, she's spinning over the edge, swallowed up in time, vanished with no trace. He sometimes still sees her face in all whom he meets. Her name never fades, stuck in limbo, wondering, will they meet again? Beautiful dancer, sweet, voluptuous pinup, wearing cherry red. He stands where she jumped, gazes at traffic below, moving to and fro, running in circles. What does this mean? What does time really mean then? Who stays till the end? Ponders behind clocks, high top of the empire, sees her doll-like face, a ghost in the mist, illuminated in white, pretty wedding dress, holding a bouquet, held in silky, soft, long gloves. She's gripping tightly, taps his broad shoulder. Her touch brings shivers down spines. He knows that she's dead, that's when the news said, that's what the news said in the morning's newspapers. In her hand, the ring, finest pink diamonds, upon her lips spills poison, bloody tears cascade, veil descends to floor, sharp thorns pierce, cutting flesh, silk white gloves turn red. Over and over he watches this scene play out. She walks towards the ledge, terrified of edge. He grasps to catch before fall, missed her by seconds. Agony sets in. Once again, he looks below. Time seems to stand still. What's a dream? What's real? She rides the elevator, taps his broad shoulder. He looks at her shocked. Someone has rewound the clock, and he's now falling, holding pink diamonds, crashing with flowers in hand on top of his car. As she stands above, so high, so numb and in tears, standing behind clocks, gazing at traffic below. She's playing out the same scene every Halloween. Who's alive? Who's dead? Twisted stories in your heads, real or illusions, dancing across the ledge. He's spinning over the edge, swallowed up in time, vanished with no trace. She sometimes still sees his face in all whom she meets. His name never fades. Stuck in limbo, wondering, will they meet again? End poem.
Great read, man. Thank you very much. And Betty took Everything is Nothing with a twist. And yeah, I'll say there's a nice twist in this. And also a Twilight Zone kind of feel, considering the run-up to this was all about her, and then the twist where now it's all about him doing the same thing. So you can really walk, all right, which one is real, which one's not, and who did fall or jump, who pushed. Not quite sure. It doesn't allude to that angle, but it does bite, because she finishes out with, vanish with no trace. She sometimes still sees his face in all whom she meets. His name never fades. Stuck in limbo, wondering, will they meet again? So still got a little play on the back end, but I'm guessing it wasn't her that did the half gainer off the Empire State Building, so to speak. He did. Twisted little tail. I like it. All right, what about you?
It was a great twisted tail. And I like her 5-7-5 lines, her imagery, and the way she was able to tell the story with the twist, and how she went from him to her, and how it crosses those lines and alternates between dream and reality. I like how it speaks, and no matter which character you read about, each perspective, the living person seems to carry with them a strong sense of guilt. So it does speak on the survivor's guilt and on the idea of a life that could not be saved. I really like her transition stands in the middle where she says, he looked at her shocked, someone has rewound the clock, and he's now falling. And then the end stands was great too. His name never fades, stuck in limbo, wondering, will they meet again? So the idea is, no matter who is dead, no matter who jumped, that there's that hope that they'll meet again. I also really like the imagery in where she says, ponders behind clocks, high tops of the empire, sees her doll-like face. You know, wonderful lines and very well done.
Nice.
All right. Up next, we have Lost and Found by Jody Melton. And go ahead, please, Rex.
Okay. Come on, where are you? Oh, there you are. Lost and Found by Jody Nelson. In the silence of the night, I found you once more. My fondest friend, where the hell have you been? I've been struggling to the core to get back to you. Is that spirit you had still burning? Are you creative? Are your creative wheels still turning? Your eyes, once shining on our dims by mistakes, echoed tales of love, pain, and heartbreaking stakes. Did you finally find the guts in you to get past the things that you've been through? I sought you in crowded rooms, on empty streets, in fleeting glances, every heartbeat. Your shadow lurked behind every wrong turn, in dreams unfulfilled, in bridges I let burn. To belong to you once more was all I ever needed. I don't feel like fighting or settling the score. Is your demon defeated? In the mirrors of deceit, I caught glimpses so brief of the love we once shared, now buried in grief. But time has a way of healing, they often say, of mending broken hearts, come what may. As days turned to nights and nights into days, I stumbled, I fell, but sought you always. And then in the quietest moment, in the calmest tide, I realized the truth that I tried so long to hide. The love I missed, the warmth I craved, was not from another, but from the heart I betrayed. For in my pursuit of love, in all things external, I lost sight of the true love, so deep, so eternal. It wasn't about another, but a reconciliation true with the man in the mirror, the one I once knew. For you, another as it might have seemed, but man I was in an old forgotten dream. Now after life's storms, through mistakes and the grip of fear, I belong to me again, talking, strong, sober, and clear, like I couldn't back then. End poem. And Jody took, it is time for me to be dead a little while and then rise again. All right. What do you got?
I like this one. I thought it had brilliant imagery and amazing heartfelt lines. I like the rhyme flow. I thought it was a great write on learning from past mistakes and reconnecting with yourself, with love and forgiveness, understanding that the person you were in the past isn't necessarily the person you are now, and the idea of facing down your own personal demons and really learning to love and embrace yourself. I really like how this took a conversational tone, as if one, as you know, standing in front of the mirror talking to oneself. You know, your shadow lurked behind every wrong turn and dreams unfulfilled and bridges I let burn. To belong to you once more was all I ever needed. I don't feel like fighting or setting the score. Is your demon defeated? In the mirrors of deceit, I caught glimpses so brief of the love we once shared, now buried in grief. But time has a way of healing, they often say, of mending broken hearts, come what may. And then, of course, I like how he, you know, because at first, you know, he writes it in such a way that you're not 100% sure. But then he has that third to last stanza with the love I missed. The warmth I craved was not from another, but from the heart I betrayed. For in my pursuit of love and all things external, I lost sight of the true love, so deep, so eternal. And you know, it wasn't about another, but a reconciliation true with the man in the mirror, the one I once knew. You know, sometimes through making bad choices in life, we can lose sight of who we once were or who we have the potential to become. So excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And you're right. The title was offered up a note, but even with the writing, it was a little deceiving until you got to the bottom end of that. And the deception, the thought of, the deception of self and breaking the idea of who and what you were because you thought you could do something else and leaving out that better part of you as a note to becoming something more is a betrayal. And you hit on that note of betrayal, but from the heart I betrayed. For in my pursuit of love in all things external, I lost sight of true love, so deep, so eternal. It wasn't about another. And but the man I want in an old forgotten dream. You leave a part of you behind instead of holding to the true path of what you had envisioned of yourself. There is a betrayal because when you he hits now he's sober and clear and he can think now as he couldn't back then because he dipped too hard in something that was not him to begin with, and he left a good part of himself behind. And in order to face those demons, you got to look in the mirror. You got to see what you've done with yourself, and then find the notion of actually, apparently, you got the left brain arguing with the right brain about this, that, and the other, and one takes the lead, and it wasn't the right lead. I like this. Thank you, Jody. All right.
All right. Up next, we have Roses Have Thorns by Tomahawk. Very well. So I misinterpreted your rules, taking for granted your persona, dining on ashes of an affair verboten. Did we meet our appetites for scandal, or was it more the scent of roses and mustard gas, sweet at first, deadly in the long view? My darling, you played so well. Might be I'm in error. I'm like a one-legged man in an ass-kicking contest. And your message to me was succinct. Go take a flying fuck at a rolling donut. Let's see how that plays out. End poem.
Thank you, Pam. Tomahawk took two. Roses and mustard gas. And what was it? Go take a flying fuck at a rolling donut. So, it does end up with a nice humorous note on the back end. Kind of hits that idea of, well, you didn't actually understand to begin with. Well, that really is a hard note. Go take a flying fucking rolling donut. Let's see how that plays out. And the idea of those type of thorns, yes. And the idea, yes. So I misinterpreted your rules. Taking for granted your persona, dining on ashes of an affair verboten. Did we meet our appetites for scandal? Ooh, kind of, yeah, hitting on the wrong lady. And you did, you read all the signs wrong. Is that sort of a scent of roses and mustard gets sweet at first, deadly in the long view. And my darling, you play so well. Might be on an error. Yeah, I'd say, wow. Yeah, misinterpreted the whole thing because, wow. I did like that thought too. I'm a one-legged man in mask getting contact. Yes. Wow. That last stanza is hard. The admittance into the to the note that, yeah, I should have known better. My fault. My bad. I got to own this one. He makes fun of himself with that thought with the ass kicking and the take a flag fuck at a rolling donut. Nicely done, Tom. All right.
Yeah, this was great. It's good to see a write from Tomahawk. I did enjoy his sense of humor in this. I thought, you know, the imagery was strong. It had biting, sardonic lines and was an excellent write on the pain of scandals and the scars of life. And I like how with only three stanzas and then the closing line, he speaks on the idea of how we don't always see people for who or what they are. And I think that especially comes through in the second stanza and the line, my darling, you play so well, might be I'm an error. And yeah, so great write and very well done. And up next we have Made of Snow by Ben Hart. And go ahead, Rex.
Oh damn, okay. Made of Snow by Ben Hart. Everything that happens behind closed eyes in pouring rain, like falling in love, is built on blind foundations, which a hopeful few call trust, but most of us know as prayer. You had spots of sapphire in hollow amber eyes, and beneath the weight of silence, bit your teeth into diamonds. You had red blood like the rest of us, but yours was warmed by love. And ours? Well, we bled snowfall. You had big plans for destiny to build a stage of dreams, dance with every man but me, and forever outrun the fleeting. You had enough and forgot to feel what you touched, a romantic lost and numb, losing to love. Something blue in the red of winter, that's what you had to be, because you heard angels were made of snow and so froze trying to fly. I tell strangers my worst secrets because they aren't safe with me. I tell the muse I'm so hopelessly in love with you, but only in the privacy of poetry. I tell my family that I'll survive, but they know when I'm bluffing. I tell myself that one day I will make it because that numbs my hands to their empty. I tell stories that were beautiful in mind, fleeting, but now just haunt your peripheral thoughts. I tell you whatever you want to hear, because I was brought up to believe that is love. To me, it always makes sense that a message in a bottle isn't addressed to the one who finds it. It's a goodbye to someone who failed to say it first. It's an I love you to the ones that hurt us. It's supposed to get lost, and that is the opposite of a sad thing, because it's a fulfilled purpose. To both, they who set adrift glass sleeps and they who rob the graves of high tides, which is more than can be said for most of our words. They just waste up on a page. And in that sense, they were born dead. End poem. Yeah. All right. Pam?
Great read, Rex, and a wonderful write by Ben. As always, great imagery and metaphors. I like how this speaks to me on the idea of trying to find purpose within ourselves as the road of pain is traveled, and the idea of having to let go and say goodbye, and the lies that we tell ourselves and others, you know, and the conflicting information between what we offer up to those of our family and friends and what we offer up to ourselves. I really like this all the way through, especially something blue in the red of winter. That's what you had to be because you heard angels were made of snow and so froze trying to fly. I tell strangers my worst secrets because they aren't safe with me. I tell the muse I'm so hopelessly in love with you, but only in the privacy of poetry. You know, it's interesting, you know, how life can be like that, how oftentimes we'll feel more comfortable offering up ourselves through poetry and to strangers than to family or friends. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
Nice. Thank you, Pam. That first one's all about the pain of love. The second one is a nice embellish to her, but it does offer up another who she is, too. You had spots of sapphire in hollow amber eyes, and beneath the weight of silence, bit your teeth into diamonds. Oof. Hard note to maybe harsh mouth. You had red blood like the rest of us, but yours was warmed by love, and ours, well, we bled snowfall. In other words, aren't worthy of her. Big plan for destiny, stage of dreams, dance with every man but me, and forever outrun the fleeting. Yeah, every man but me, he's a wallflower. You had enough and forgot to feel what you touched, a romantic lost and numb, losing to love. Sounds like Gold Digger. I did like that short one too. The Red of Winter. That's what you had to be because you heard angels were made of snow and so froze trying to fly. The idea of reaching for the brass ring And that fifth one, oof, telling strangers my worst secrets, my muse, I'm so hopeless in love with you, but only in the privacy of poetry. Hiding is true feelings because of the pain driven into. And then you hit that last stanza. I tell you whatever you want to hear because I was brought up to believe that is love. There's a course correction that needs to come with that one. And the back end of this kind of hits me with the idea of understanding the move on, that thought of the message in the bottle. Kind of with this hits me with the idea of a metaphor. Well, I really didn't catch the message the first time around. I was blinded by my thoughts and what I felt instead of seeing who and what she was because of her actions. And you pay for it. That message in the bottle. It's the idea of finally getting and understanding what it is all about. So, nicely done, Ben. Thank you very much. All right.
All right. Up next we have A Toast to the Dead by Papa Terminus. So they utter these dead calves that hang from hooks, bellies sliced, a constant drip of rubies in a bucket, dark as Mushu, utterance of the dead. The champagne tastes bitter, filled to the brim with wasted dreams and intoxicated zombies, tongues ripped out so no secrets could be spread. For heaven burns tonight, and the dead drink a toast, a sour reminder of the taste of blood and how it never washed out from your hands. Sour grapes, perhaps. Too many dead ends, scrabbling the jet fighters, soaring overhead. Closing scriptures, prayer for the dying, as the zombies shamble like mounds of flesh, punching a time clock, raising a toast. On our lips drip Chardonnay and poem.
Great read, Pat. Thank you very much. And Papa took the champagne with this. All right. On this small distance, A Toast to the Dead. There's almost a note to it with that title, sort of awake, so to speak. So they utter these dead cast and drip rubies in a bucket, dark as Mushu, utterance of the dead. I like the metaphorical note to a church with that one. The champagne tastes a bitter, filled the brain with wasted dreams. Intoxicated zombies, tongues ripped out so no secrets could be spread. That kind of... The zombies, the crowd at the funeral, nobody really wants to offer up a... Although you might get some who offer up ideas, but the idea of actually dragging out something at a funeral or a wake or something is not something you do in polite company. It's their vote, so you keep your mouth shut. And a dead drink, a toast, a sour reminder of the taste of blood and how it never washed out from the hands. A sour reminder. I can think that a sort of dead or flat champagne and the taste of blood, you get that mix of iron taste and there's a little bit of salt that mixes them with both, maybe. The sourness in the moment. And, let's see, let's have the next one. Sour grapes, perhaps. There's a double meaning with that one. Too many dead ends, scrabbling the jet fighter soaring overhead. Closing scriptures, praying for the dying, as the zombies shamble like mounds of flesh, punching a time clock, raising a toast. Oof. There's almost a note to hypocrisy with that thought in that last stanza, punching a time clock, raising, as if they're forced to be at that funeral. They feel obligated, so to speak. So they're only there to offer up that toast without saying anything or offering up false platitudes just for the sake of saying something. I'll have to read that a little bit deeper. But what about you?
Oh, well said there, Rex. I like the imagery and metaphors in this. I thought they were quite brilliant, and it's an excellent dark right that speaks to me on a life of guilty consciousness as blood and money is spilled. And I really like where he says, for heaven burns night and the dead drink a toast, a sour reminder of the taste of blood and how it never washed out from your hands. And then where he brings in closing scriptures, prayer for the dying as the zombies shamble like mounds of flesh, punching a time clock, raising a toast. You know, that a whole idea of trying to fit into a life of normality, leading one into a zombified state. So excellent right and very well done. And up next we have for Billy Pilgrim after Kurt Vonnegut the Younger, and by Peter Solway. And go ahead, please, Rex, and give that a read.
For Billy Pilgrim after Kurt Vonnegut the Younger by Peter Solway. More lives than a cat in heat, surviving this and scratching that. Tennessee Williams, one-dimensional, time's location. New Orleans, summer back then, but astronauts' abduction. Fire blitzing of history, Dresden, optometrist's convention. Poor Billy Pilgrim, all over continual time. Motel Trafalgar doors sign flashing. A good night's rest rarely forthcoming. But chain-smoking novelist, a happy conclusion to plot's cosmic concussion, to readers be kind, pretty woman, jukebox of Roy Orbison, an extraterrestrial baby born, a new sort of Jesus, sucking and crucified, all in light spectrum, way before 2001, Oscar beating his tin drum. Yes, eulogy to the dead and living Billy, knowing with an honest man's humility, forever's rainbow, so it bends, better options than terrestrial concerns. Zoo of Noah, Ark of Incontinence. Dove a duck, love scene with movie queen, better than sad fat wife who farts. Sinks to slaughterhouse basement, watch immortal luck. And poem.
Great, right. Rex. Yeah, I like this one. It was quite entertaining and thought-provoking. I like how he brings in some famous characters and authors, such as the character of Billy Pilgrim and the character of Oscar from Tin Drum by Günter Grass. You know, to me, this really spoke on the idea of the characters pulled by the strings of the author for the entertainment of the crowd. And I really like where he says, but chain smoking novelist, a happy conclusion to plot, cosmic concussion, to readers be kind, pretty woman, jukebox of Roy Orbison. Oftentimes, and thankfully not all the time, but oftentimes, you know, people want to read books with a happy ending. You know, they want that funky jukebox music. They want everything to line up perfectly. You know, they don't want to see characters suffer because it's a reflection of the suffering that happens in real life. I really like the imagery and the lines. An extraterrestrial baby born, a new sort of Jesus, sucking and crucified, all in light spectrum, way before 2001, Oscar beating his tin drum. And I love the phrase, dove a duck, love scene with movie queen, better than sad fat wife who farts. You know, the wife who farts makes me think of James Joyce and Nora, but I don't think Nora was a particularly fat woman, if I remember right. She was rather slim. but I couldn't help but think of how he wrote love letters about her farts. But this is definitely a great write all the way through and very well done.
Nice to say, thank you. I did it more last than a cat, and he survived a missing squishing there, and then dropping in Tennessee when it's thought the cat on a hot tin roof. Fire blitzing off historic Dresden, World War II. Optometrist convention, kind of the idea of having one's eyes, in the need of having one's eyes adjusted, so to speak. Billy Pilgrim, All Over Continual Time. Motel Trafalgar Door, sign flashing. A Good Night Rest, rarely forthcoming. Sort of, well, that comes out of Vonnegut, sort of an alien planet. And a chain smoking novelist. Pop's Cosmic Concussion, To Lead Us Be Kind, Pretty Woman, Jukebox of Roy Orbison, double dip on that one, nice. And then he rolls into The Extraterrestrial Baby Born, A New Sort of Jesus, Sucking and Crucified, All in Light Spectrum, way before 2001, Oscar beating his tin drum, nice. I'm going with a K for that. Knowing with an honest man's humility, forever's rainbow, it bends, better options and terrestrial concerns. Zoo of Noah, and then Ark of Incontinence. The Ark of Incontinence. Well, there's a lot of shit building up. Dove a Duck, or Love Scene with Movie Queen. Better than Sad Fat Wife, if I like that. Kicks the Slaughterhouse Basement, What Immortal Luck. Oh, God. Dove a Duck, Love Scene, Movie Queen. I'm wondering which Movie Queen he's referring to. Oh, wow. Hey, better hide yourself in a basement away from your fat white spots. that's an epic conclusion. Yeah. Thank you, Peter. All right, what's up? Next.
Right. Well, up next, we have, let's see here, In a World of Popped Corks and Champagne Fountain Fails by Sarah Allett. It's been a while since I saw a blank page. Age has a funny way on how things fit. Bit by bit, my soul slowly disengaged. Rage and emptiness became the new split. Shit had become just an everyday thing. Stinging salted tears only made raw cheeks. Bleak without a goal, just a loose shoestring, bringing solitude to already meek. Seeking refuge in the purest of snow white, bright screens, soothing words, not ready to fall, stalled by denial, your whole lost from sight. Fighting seems hard when it's already called. End poem.
Great reading. Thank you very much. And Sarah took the champagne is dead. That's her prompt. In the world of popcorns and champagne fountain sale. Oof. All right, the title hits the next note. And that first line gives you a reference point to where she's going. It's been a while since I saw a blank page. Age has a funny way on how things fit. And then that bit by bit, my soul slowly disengaged. Rage and emptiness became the new split. You roll into that angle of, hey, you can always offer up something to drop down on a page. All of a sudden, the words aren't coming. And then shit has just become an everyday thing. Stinging salt tears only made raw cheeks. And then I like that last stanza. Seeking refuge in the purest of Snow White. Bright screen, soothing words, not rainbow. Snow White, the idea of that white noise. Okay, that's what I'm thinking of. white noise that kind of gives you just a nothing, no other sound except the generation of white noise. It's supposed to help take you out of maybe a touch of turmoil, anger, whatever it is. You've got white noise surrounding you. Nothing else comes in to interrupt the mind itself or the feeling that you generate. And still, it's not working at the moment. Stalled by stalled by denial, your whole lost from sight. Fighting seems hard when it's caught, when it's already called. It's almost as though I'm all beaten out in the moment. I feel empty, drained, nothing left. Almost as if I'm ready to call it quits and try on something else. What about you?
Yeah, I like this one. I do like that title. It's very clever. Brilliant imagery and metaphors. I like how it speaks on the idea, to me anyways, on how our perspective changes as we age, on seeing the ugliness that life offers up and trying to escape from it all by being in denial. And I think that especially comes through in the end stanza, seeking refuge in the purest of snow white. And I like how what you offered up there about the white noise. I had thought of the refuge in the purest of snow white could either be a reference to cocaine, which, you know, and addiction, or it was the idea of the whitewashed walls that hide the ugly truth. Bright screens, soothing words, not ready to fall, stalled by denial, your whole lost from sight. Fighting seems hard when it's already called. There's the end line, fighting seems hard when it's already called, speaks to me on the idea of, you know, why bother fighting against what is our fate? So excellent write and very well done.
Okay, I'll buy that. All right. What's next?
Up next, we have So It Goes by Lockdown Larks. And go ahead, Rex.
So It Goes by Lockdown Larks. And so it goes, the blue sphere spins, sapient ego grins, nobody wins. And so it goes, fighting for fear, this and every year, shedding no tear. And so it goes, there is no regret, values under threat, we'll make them pay yet. And so it goes, we'll settle scores, expunge these sores in eternal wars. And so it goes, history is sorrow, sin we can borrow, like no tomorrow. And so it goes, is sapient forlorn to its late fate sworn, or can they be reborn? And so, who knows? And Paul, all right. And so it goes. All right.
and I see that he took what was it, the quote, hence so it goes, or something like that, I'm
yes.
guessing. Yep.
Yep.
Yep. Great use of repetition. Wonderful lyrical quality. I like how he opens up by describing the spinning of the earth. And so it goes, the blue sphere spins, sapient ego grins, nobody wins. You know, I like how he describes mankind with sapient ego grins, the idea that we're so full of ourselves. And always think we're making the right choice and the right actions. Great rhyme and flow, really thoughtful lines, an excellent write on the fate that needs to be faced. I really like where he says, history is sorrow, sin we can borrow like no tomorrow. That idea of looking at generations past, and, you know, the what has been offered up as a learning lesson. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
Well, that first had me thinking of stop the world, I want to get off. And the thought with the Sapien ego grins is that note that most people don't know. They refer to it as homo sapiens, but the actual is homo sapiens sapiens. We double dipped. So, and that leads right into the fact that we haven't learned anything, fighting for fear, no regret values on the threats, expunge these scores and eternal wars. Again, soon we can borrow like no tomorrow. Again, rinse and repeat. The idea of not actually paying in the meantime. Nah, we'll pay down the road. They can all pay for it long after we're gone. Unfortunately, that time has come. The time for payment has come due. And the idea, can they be reborn? And so, who knows? We might be testing those waters very soon, Mark. So, thank you very much. I like it.
Absolutely, absolutely. Great comment, Rex, and great show tonight.
Well, we did them all?
Yep.
Okay. All right. Cool. All right, great show, Pam. Thank you very much. And for Naomi and Christina, Miriam, and Northern Phoenix on the board, thank you very much, ladies. I guess we'll be doing this again next Tuesday. Remember, next week, what day starts Halloween? Is it Wednesday or Tuesday?
Wednesday's after midnight show. So it'll be 12:30 a.m. on Wednesday. Arcana and Stellina will be kicking off Halloween week with delving the depths of darkness, and their topic will be Samhain.
Okay. And
yep.
And wait a minute. Yeah, because I've got Halloween music this weekend, so come check it out for Sunday. Got some fun music, some quirky, some funny, and some a little on the dark side. So have a bit of fun with that. And who finishes out on the 31st is on Wednesday, isn't it?
The 31st is a Tuesday. The lineup is, if you're interested, I can tell you the lineup. It's 12:30 a.m. on Wednesday is Delving the Depths of Darkness. Then 10 p.m. on Wednesday is the Art of Seduction, which Jean is running that contest. And let's see, then we have Thursday is In Our Craft of Soul and Art. Lawrence is running that contest. Then Friday at 12:30 a.m. is Break On Through, and I'm running that contest, which is Windows. But we just got a whole bunch of other like contests running too. Like Jean's running several of them, and I'm running a couple others. And then we will have 12:30 a.m. on Saturday. We'll have a Faziana, and we just got a whole great big lineup of. I don't think I even named them all there, but we got a great variety of Halloween themed contests being ran by our hosts and hostesses. So make sure to check them all out. But yes, it will be Twisted Tuesdays with the Twisted Sisters that will be on actual Halloween night. And
okay.
Jean is running that contest. So yeah, it's going to be an awesome week.
All right. All right, guys. Until next Tuesday morning, we'll see you after midnight then. So good night all, and thank you very much.